think. All right. So, for the last few weeks, we've been doing the serial gospel. We've been looking at the gospel just a little bit, each different part of it each week. Right now, we're up to the crucifixion. So we'll continue with that from there. Like usual, when I teach up here, I got candy if you want to talk. There's usually no bad answers. I can usually turn a bad answer into a good answer. So anyways, I got chocolate. Help me out. The more you talk, less I got to. All right, so we start out every week about the same place. 1 Corinthians 15, verses 1 through 4. Now I would remind you, brothers, of the gospel I preached to you, which you received, in which you stand, and by which you are being saved. If you hold fast to the word I preached to you, unless you believed in vain. For I delivered to you as of first importance what I also received, that Christ died for our sins, in accordance with the Scriptures, that he was buried, that he was raised on the third day, in accordance with the Scriptures. So what's the gospel that Paul preached? What's the gospel that the Corinthians received? What's the gospel that's saving the Corinthians? And what is the gospel that the Corinthians held fast? Death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. There you go. That's pretty. There you go. I'll give you a fourth one, but you left out according to the Scriptures. All right. That's it. It's in blue. That's the gospel. Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. He was buried. He was raised up on the third day in accordance with the Scriptures. So we're kind of up to that point right now, believe it or not. In Acts 2, verses 22 through 23, on the day of Pentecost, Peter was talking to the faithful Jews, those that stuck around, that came back for the celebration. And he says, "Men of Israel, hear these words, Jesus of Nazareth, a man attested to you by God with mighty works and wonders and signs that God did through him in your midst, as you yourselves know. This Jesus, delivered up according to the definite plan and foreknowledge of God, you crucified and killed by the hands of lawless men." So we spent a Wednesday a few weeks ago looking at four of the mighty works, wonders, and signs that Jesus did in the midst of the people. Can you name one? Huh? You can name them all. Wanda can name them all. I know you said you could name them all. Really? You can name one. Name one. Healing the blind, there's one. He raised Lazarus, there's two. Fed the 5,000. Lloyd's even getting in on the action there. Yep, paralytic. Here we go. Oh, sorry. That was yours. Yeah, I wasn't listening close enough. Yes, we had a paralytic come to life. We even had an eyewitness that class. So anyways, Kirk's not here to relive that role, but Lisa lives it in her nightmares every night. She has no idea what we're going to put them through from here on out. All right, John 11, 47 through 48. So the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered to council and said, "What are we to do? For this man performs many signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation." So because of the many signs performed by Jesus, what was the fear of the chief priests and Pharisees? And what was the plan of Caiaphas, the high priest, to keep that from happening? This happened right after he raised Lazarus. But yeah, they thought the Romans were taking their money, taking their place, taking their land, taking their jobs. Caiaphas says, "Let's kill him." This is just a review. But anyways, yeah, Caiaphas says, "We got to kill him." Matthew 26, 63 through 66, and the high priest said to him, "I adjure you by the living God, tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God." And Jesus said to him, "You have said so, but I tell you, from now on you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his robes and said, "He has uttered blasphemy. What further witnesses do we need? You have now heard this blasphemy. What is your judgment?" And they answered, "He deserves death." So Jesus was on trial in the house of Caiaphas, in an all-night trial, before Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin, the 70 council members of the Pharisees, the Sadducees, I don't know, I think it's all. What was the charge and penalty against Jesus? Blasphemy. He claimed to be the Son of God. That was what they asked him. "Do you claim to be the Son of God?" And he says, "You say I am." So that's it. What's the penalty? Death. Death's the penalty. We looked at that at the time. We looked at that in the Old Testament. Anyways, they didn't have the authority to pass down. They'd kind of given up their authority. Well, they would pass it down in terms like stoning, like they did with Stephen in Acts chapter 6. They didn't do it officially. The Romans finally took that power away from them. Luke 23, verse 2, they began to accuse him, saying, "We found this man misleading our nation and forbidding us to give tribute to Caesar, and saying that he himself is Christ, a king." So Luke's account of the trial before Pilate, so actually, after Jesus went through an all-night trial before Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin, then they took him to the Roman authorities, Pilate, and they bring three charges against him. What are the three charges there?
Misleading the nation.
Saying we can't pay tribute to Caesar.
And saying that he's the king.
Saying he's the king. There you go. Those are the three charges. A whole lot different than what they had back when he said he was the son of God, and when they call him blasphemy. Now they're calling him a seditionist. Man, my chocolate's going away quick tonight. This is a good thing. Luke 23, 13 through 16, Pilate then called together the chief priests and the rulers and the people and said to them, "You brought me this man as one who was misleading the people. And after examining him before you, behold, I did not find this man guilty of any of your charges against him. Neither did Herod, for he sent him back to us. Look, nothing deserving death has been done by him. I will therefore punish and release him." So in the trials before Pilate and Herod, what was the judgment of the Romans? Not guilty. I said, we don't find nothing he's done. You guys are making this stuff up. He's not guilty. John 19, 14 through 15. Now it was the day of the preparation of the Passover. It was about the sixth hour. He said to the Jews, "Behold your king." They cried out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." Did the not guilty verdict satisfy the Jews? Not at all. Not even close. Crucify him. Away with him. We have no king. God's no longer our king. Caesar's our king.
It's just amazing how they could say that.
Yeah.
You know, how they felt about the Romans and that they could actually say they could give allegiance to Caesar.
How much they hated Romans, how much they claimed to be the leaders of the Jewish nation. They claim, you know, circumcision was a sign of that they belonged to God. And how much they held this. And they're holding him to one commandment. They're holding him to one law, but they've broken all kinds of laws. And they just finally spit it out of their mouth. Not even God. We allege.
They would basically say anything to get what they want.
Yes. Yes. It would say absolutely anything. I got that. But that's exactly right. I'll get that in a second. But you're right, they would say anything to get what they wanted. Matthew 27, 24 through 26. So when Pilate saw that he was gaining nothing, but rather that a riot was beginning, he took water and washed his hands before the crowd, saying, "I am innocent of this man's blood. See it to it yourselves." And all the people answered, "His blood be on us and our children." Then he released for them Barabbas, and having scourged Jesus, delivered him to be crucified. So who's responsible for sending an innocent man to be crucified? The Jews? Or the Romans?
Both.
I'll give Pat one, and I'll give Bob one. All right. Go for it. This whole thing is, a lot of it is, it's a big metaphor. You see the real high priest being tried by a guy who claims to be high priest. You see man being judged by someone who's going to be judged by somebody else. He's charged with claiming he's the son of God, but he really is the son of God, so it's not even a crime. It's crazy. There's a million things in here that are just this way. And you could go on and on. And I'm sure what Paul says, he taught the gospel, that's all he taught. I don't think he probably had to teach anything more. He could go on and on with looking at this kind of stuff. Acts 2, verse 22 through 23, we started with this. And then that part of it says, you crucified and killed by the hands of lawless men. Lawless means flagrant disregard for God, according to Vine's Dictionary. And it's the same word that's used in 2 Thessalonians 2, 3 through 4. Let no one deceive you in any way, for that day will not come unless the rebellion comes first. And a man of lawlessness is revealed, the son of destruction, who opposes and exalts himself against every so-called God or object of worship, so that he takes his seat in the temple of God, proclaiming himself to be God. And that's what Caiaphas and these guys have done. They are as much as lawless men as the Romans have been. By and large, if you ask somebody who's responsible for putting Jesus on the cross, you'll probably get Judas as your first answer. You might get Pilate as your answer. You won't get a whole lot of people to say Caiaphas the high priest. But when I looked at it the last couple weeks, and you can see he's pretty dirty in all this. Not to release the other two by any means, but he's pretty dirty. So, okay, that's our review. So if you weren't here last week or the week before or the week before that or the week before that or whenever, okay, you're on the same playing field as everybody else now. So, all right, to the cross. We're going to look at the crucifixion. The crucifixion happens in all four Gospels almost parallel. I say it's almost parallel because each one has a different element to it that the other ones don't. So I'm going to try to present what the text says without a whole lot of extra commentary. But if you got something you want to see, talk about, whatever, we're going to do that too. But I want you to try to get the whole picture, get the whole story. So we'll start with him on his way to the cross. Matthew 27, 31 through 34. When they had mocked him, they stripped him of his robe and put his own clothes on him and led him away to crucify him. And as they went out, they found a man from Cyrene, Simon by name. They compelled this man to carry his cross. And when they came to a place called Golgotha, which means place of a skull, they offered him wine to drink mixed with gall. But when he tasted it, he would not drink it. So that's Matthew's account. Like I said, they're going to be a little different. And I think we need to reconcile them all. If you see differences... It doesn't say Matthew wasn't there, as far as what I've gone through. But I don't know. I don't know. You don't think he was there? I don't know. In the text that I got today, the text of the crucifixion, it doesn't say. It doesn't say who was and doesn't say who wasn't. It talks about some women.
It mentions John,
you're right, and it mentions his mom.
Yeah, you don't know who was hiding back in the corner somewhere.
Yeah.
But they all were hiding from the light except John.
Sure. I've kind of thought about this myself. If you weren't hiding for your life, which they are, they don't know that they're not next. Would you have had the interest, nerve, love, whatever, to be there?
And the story kind of indicates at least Peter followed at a distance.
Yeah, the women are at a distance. Some of the followers are at a distance. And that's where, if you're going to be there, I don't think I'd want the front row seat just because I wouldn't want to be there for the spectacle. Also, I don't want to be the first one they grab. Hey, got an extra stick right here for you. I don't want that to happen. I don't know. But yeah. Would you be there?
What about? I admire John being there to put it across.
That's a lot of love for somebody. His mom being there. And really?
Yeah.
It's your own kid? Would you be there? The guy that used to cut my hair way back in the day, his son was kidnapped, tortured, and killed. When they brought that guy to justice and gave him the death penalty, he was there. But I think that's part of closure for him. But I don't know if it had been his own son if he'd been there. I don't know. You see it. You see people that are. I don't know. I think there's no right or wrong answer. It'd be a tough thing to do. I admire the people who are with their loved ones to the last, whether it's sickness or whatever, but don't feel bad for the ones that step out either. It's a call. Mark 15, 20 through 23. And when they had mocked him, they stripped him of the purple cloak and put his own clothes on him. They led him out to crucify him. They compelled a passerby, Simon the Cyrene, who was coming in from the country, the father of Alexander and Rufus, to carry his cross. And they brought him to the place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull, and they offered him wine mixed with myrrh, but he did not take it. All right, so you've seen Matthew and Mark. Have you seen any differences in their accounts? Not much. Yeah, once it, Matthew says he would not drink it. When he tasted it, he wouldn't drink it. Mark says they offered him, but he didn't take it. Little differences, can you reconcile them? Probably. I mean, if you put up your mouth and say, you could say, yeah, you wouldn't take it. This one says myrrh. The other one says gall. What's the difference? I don't know. They're both probably there to ease the pain. Probably not offered by one of the disciples. It's probably, I don't know. He didn't take it. Is it because that he didn't want to ease the pain? No, it's really just he tasted it to fulfill Scripture. But Luke 23, 26 through 32. As they led him away, they seized one Simon the Cyrene, who was coming in from the country, and laid him on the cross to carry it behind Jesus. And there followed him a great multitude of the people and of women who were mourning and lamenting for him. But turning to them, Jesus said, "Daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For behold, the days are coming when they will say, 'Blessed are the barren and the wombs that never bore and the breasts that were never nursed.' They will begin to say to the mountains, 'Fall on us,' and to the hills, 'Cover us.' What if they do these things when the wood is green? What will happen when it is dry?" Two others who were criminals were led away to be put to death with him. Except sometimes you see a little bit extra in one of the other Gospels. If you want to page mark your Bibles, it's Matthew 27, Mark 15, Luke 23, and John 19 are the four chapters. We flip back and forth and constantly. So anything different you see here? You see who was part of this group. You see that it was women. It was a multitude of people. And we see the two criminals.
You think the two criminals
were carrying
their own cross?
That's a good... Yeah, that is a good question. Jesus couldn't because he's too weak, and then you're right. But he starts out carrying it, as we see in John 19, 16 through 17. So they took Jesus, and he went out bearing his own cross to the place called the place of the skull, which in Aramaic is called Golgotha. So Jesus starts out carrying his own cross. He's probably weak. Like I said, he's been up all night. He's been beat and scourged. You know, if you try to stay up for 24 hours, you're pretty tired. Take that up a little bit longer, been beaten and stuff, he's not going to carry it very far. That's why they compel Simon to pick it up and carry it. So, yeah. So we kind of get this whole picture right there, what the whole procession is. So Jesus carries the cross. After Jesus couldn't carry it, they made Simon carry it behind Jesus. You got the whole weep for yourselves thing. Two others in the procession, the criminals, and Jesus was given wine and gall to drink, with wine, gall, myrrh to drink. And that's pretty much that part of it. So, crucified and reviled, first 3 hours. So I got all four chapters, all four Gospels on one slide for this one. Matthew 27, 38, then two robbers were crucified with him, one on the right and one on the left. Mark 15, 27, with them they crucified two robbers, one on his right and one on his left. Luke 23, 33, and when they came to the place that is called the skull, when they crucified him and the criminals, one on his right and one on his left. John 19, 18, when they crucified him and with him two others, one on either side and Jesus between them. All right, it's pretty visual, right? Three guys, Jesus in the center, two robbers, not thieves. These guys were probably with Barabbas. They were probably rebels. They were probably somebody that caused an insurrection. They did more than just take something. more violent than that. Taking something, not worthy of death. So they've probably done more than that. Isaiah 53 verse 9 has a prophecy. They made his grave with the wicked and with the rich man in his death, although he had done no violence and there was no deceit in his mouth. Part of the gospel was he died, buried, and resurrected according to the scriptures. So some of that is the prophecies already said this kind of stuff would happen. And this is the kind of stuff that the Jews would have known. Caiaphas himself would have known this. They made his grave with the wicked. He dies to wicked guys, to robbers. You also see that same thing with the rich man in his death. What's that? Joseph of Arimathea, rich man's tomb. Okay, Matthew 27, 36 through 37. Then he sat down and kept watch over him there, and over his head they put a charge against him which read, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Mark 15, 25 through 26. It was the third hour when they crucified him, and the inscription of the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." Luke 23, 38. There was also an inscription over him, "This is the King of the Jews." John 19, 19 through 20. Pilate also wrote an inscription and put it on the cross. It read, "Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews." Many of the Jews read this inscription for the place where Jesus was crucified, near the city. It was written in Aramaic, in Latin, and Greek. All right. One of the things I've always read, I haven't always read, but I've read in the past, that some crucifixions happened on a T, and some happened on an X. Which did it happen on? Who would know? But one thing that would lead me to believe it's probably not the X is the fact that they put the inscription above his head. And on an X, there's no spot to put it. Does that make it right or wrong? No. But that would be one thing that would lead me to believe that. So, what's the sign say? Okay. Why is it different in all four Gospels? Four different men that wrote it. Right. They wrote what was important, right? Yeah. King of the Jews. You're right. That's the part. That's the important part. The rest of it, it's not the important part. That's the important part. King of the Jews. That was the charge that was brought against him. That's what Pilate charged him with. Ask him about. That's what it is. They wrote it in three languages, according to John: Aramaic, Latin, and Greek. Those are the languages of the time. Aramaic was the common, everyday language of the Jews. Latin was the language of the Romans, and Greek was the language that everybody spoke. Language of trade.
I find it interesting that even though Pilate found him not guilty, found him innocent of all charges, that he would make sure that this was put on the cross. Because, again, this is kind of linking it back. This is the Jews' fault, not my fault.
Yeah.
This is the Jewish leader's fault that he's on this cross.
His hands are dirty. Yeah, he's as bloody as the Jews are, but he's passing the buck back to them the same as they've passed the buck to him. Yeah, who's guilty in this? Ask one, they'll point the finger at the other one. You know you want all this. Yeah, he washed his hands. I'm washing my hands of this. This is on you. And they said, put that blood on us. Put that blood on all our kids. That's how they wanted. Why not? Oh, they definitely didn't want that. Yeah. Yeah. He asked them several times, and that's like I say, he's sending a message to them. Yeah, the language of the educated, you're right. It wasn't just a street language. That was the language of trade. It was the language of the education. You're right. Greek was that. It was definitely there for everybody. John 19, 21 through 22. So the chief priests of the Jews said to Pilate, "Don't write the King of the Jews, but rather, 'This man said I am the King of the Jews.'" Pilate answered, "What I've written, I've written." So no, the Jews don't want that on there. Pilate says, "You bringing them to hear me, and I'm going to go this far. What it is what it is." Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Just enough. Matthew 27:35, and when they had crucified him, they divided his garments among them by casting lots. Mark 15:24, and when they crucified him and divided his garments among them, casting lots for them to decide what each should take. Luke 23:34, Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do, and they cast lots to divide his garments. And John 23:19-24, when the soldiers had crucified Jesus, they took his garments and divided them into four parts, one part for each soldier, also his tunic. But the tunic was seamless, woven in one piece from top to bottom. So they said to one another, let us not tear it, but cast lots for it to see whose it shall be. And this was to fulfill the scripture which says, they divided my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots. Did I get that one? Nope, I didn't pull it. Four soldiers. Yeah, a quaternion is what it's called. I think I got that right. A quaternion. There's four soldiers. Yep. Yeah, you're right. There's the only place that tells you there's four. There's a little bit of information in each one of these. Yes. Yes. One, he says, Father, forgive them for, yeah, Luke 23:34. That's the only place that one said that. And we all know that one, right? There's just one spot. It's all, a lot of this stuff, we know it, but it's just from one spot, just another, putting it all together.
And I think he was, you know, Bobby was talking about the soldiers that spit on him, slapped him and all that. But, you know, and these are soldiers that were part of the physical crucifixion, but, you know, the fact that he could pray for them and ask the Father to forgive them.
That forgiveness is amazing. To go through that and say, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing.
As sure as the love that he has for men, even though those yeah. were his enemies, and he's showing, you know, he's told us already that we're supposed to love our enemies and do good to those who do bad to you, do evil to you. And here, he's exemplifying.
Yeah, he shows that love, exemplifies it. The love that he has for his enemies. I mean, they are, not most of us have never been persecuted to the point that he's being persecuted to. Susan?
Question. Forgive them for they know not what they do. It sounds like he's really talking about the specific soldiers that are casting lots on his garments. They did not know what they were doing because they were not Jews.
That's true.
They knew exactly what they were doing.
They're doing their job. Doing what their job. Okay, you don't know, can't you? It's, yeah, they're doing their job. As we looked at some of the earlier stuff, you see them doing things out of character. And like Coughlin's commentary talks about the hand of Satan that's in some of that stuff. Even though they were soldiers, even though they've probably been through the worst of things, some of the stuff they did was just probably really out of character. Come on, dividing up somebody's clothes? Yeah, I know he doesn't need them anymore, but... That's kind of rude, isn't it? Really? But that's what it. That's maybe so. That's a tradition. There you go. They knew the prophecies. Yeah. They don't care. That's what we're talking about, the lawless part. They put themselves in the place of God. They've judged him. Part of this seamless tunic... I remember right, that's supposed to be the tunic of the high priest itself is woven that way, right? So again, another symbolic thing, partly because he is the high priest, and partly, what's that? It's purple, you're right, it's purple, it's blue and...
Is that prophecy in Isaiah or where?
I don't know, I didn't look it up, I forgot to. That prophecy right there? There you go, Psalms 22. This whole thing parallels Psalms 22. If you've ever, Psalm 22 parallels the whole thing. It tells, basically Psalm 22 tells this story from Jesus' point of view. The whole thing pulls it out. But you're right, it's purple. It's blue, which represents, what is it? They say blue represents heaven and red represents blood. And they weave together to make purple.
Yeah,
what's on TV. You still got that black and white TV with the veil in the between the holies and the holiest of holies, is the same thing. So same color. What? Do you want that? Because you saw a red one?
No, I'm saying the veil when it was torn.
Yeah. Yep, from top to bottom. Sure. Yeah, because he abolishes the job of the high priest because he takes it. Didn't they really? Yeah. That's Jews. That's all right. That's all right. We'll stick with that. We'll stick with it. All right, Matthew 27:39-44. And those who passed by derided him, wagging their heads and saying, "You who would destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself. If you're the Son of God, come down from the cross." So also the chief priests and the scribes and the elders mocked him, saying, "He saved others. Can he not save himself? He is the King of Israel. Let him come down now from the cross, and we will believe in him. He trusts in God. Let God deliver him now if he desires him. For he said, 'I am the Son of God.' And the robbers who were crucified with him also reviled him in the same way." He's getting an earful from everywhere. The crowd, he's getting it from the Jews.
They knew. All the stuff they had heard, they had seen, they knew.
Yeah. It ain't if. It's like that. You saved others. They believe he saved others. Save yourself. You're the King of the Jews. You're the King of Israel. Come down from there. You trust in God. Let God save you. They knew. Save yourself. You saved others. They believed in it that much. But you got to save yourself if you want us to believe in you. And it's come from the chief priests, the scribes, the elders, and the guys on the crosses. Yeah, and then when we see that, we want something else, even better. Yeah, that's exactly how it works. The two robbers, two thieves. Yeah, we tend to take the robbery down to thievery. It's worse than that. Yeah, it's worse than that. Mark 15:29-32, and those who passed by derided him, wagging their heads and saying, "Aha, you who would destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself, come down from the cross." So also the chief priests with the scribes mocked him to one another, saying, "He saved others, he cannot save himself. Let the Christ, the King of Israel, come down now from the cross that we may see and believe." Those who were crucified with him also reviled him. 32, let the Christ come down. They give him credit for being the Christ, not the so-called Christ. There's no quotes around that. The Christ, they call him the Christ. They know who he is. Luke 23:35-37, the people stood by watching, and the ruler scoffed at him, saying, "He saved others, let him save himself. If he is the Christ of God, his chosen one." See, there's an if. The soldiers also mocked him, saying, coming up and offering him sour wine and saying, "If you are the King of Jews, save yourself." Verses 38-43, one of the criminals who were hanged railed at him, saying, "Are you not the Christ? Save yourself and us." And the other rebuked him, saying, "Do you not fear God, since you are under the same sentence of condemnation? And we indeed justly, for we are receiving the due reward of our deeds. But this man has done nothing wrong." And he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And he said to him, "Truly I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise." Okay. No, just him.
And they always wanted a king.
They always wanted a king.
Mainly, I guess, because
the neighbors had kings.
The people around them had kings.
Yeah. They had kings they could see, had kings they could blame. But yeah, God was the king. It was a theocracy. God is in charge.
He did not want an earthly king.
No, he warned them. He warned them drastically. Sunday morning, Matt pulled out those scriptures of this is what's going to happen. When do you have a king? And the same thing, right now. Yeah. Sons, your daughters, your land, your possessions, whatever. John 19:25-27. But standing by the cross of Jesus were his mother and his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing by her by, he said to his mother, "Woman, behold your son." When he said to the disciple, "Behold your mother," and from that hour the disciple took her to his own home. All right, so this is who we see standing off a little ways. Who do we see? His mom. Somebody. Take this stuff. Okay, we've got Mary Magdalene, somebody else. Mary, the mother, the wife of Clopas. Who said that one?
His aunt.
I've read that one out of four women at the time were named Mary. So if you think there's a lot of Marys in the Bible, there's probably a reason for that. One out of four. All right, and the disciple whom he loved. Who do you think that might be? John. Did Jim Seltzer say John? No, it wasn't Sue, it was John. Yeah.
Jesus' aunt.
Oh, Jesus' aunt. Okay. So his mom, his aunt, and Mary Magdalene. The one whom we love, we typically believe is John. If you want to get into a controversy, and I'll leave it at this, the one whom we loved might also be Lazarus. That's how he's described when he goes to raise him. So I'll just leave you with that controversy, and I'm not going to add anything more to that. But John was the apostle that lived the longest. He outlived them all. He was the last one when he read Revelation at the age of, who knows, close to 100. You going to make 100?
Remember what he says in there? What is it to you if I say John will be here when I return?
Yeah.
What does it make to you? But he did live the whole
time. He lived a long time. He lived hundreds old. Hundreds old.
Peter only did it 43.
There you go. If Bob lives to be 100, I'll be old too. Yeah. And then we'll still go out and eat breakfast with fish and stuff. All right. That's it. Anyways, that's the only place it tells really who was standing off at a distance. All right. A lot of people in the Old Testament lived over 100, but then God set it at 120.
I'm talking about the 900, but generally you read about prophets and other people and kings and so forth, they lived 110.
Yeah.
There's an awful number that's in there.
Yeah. I think it's after the flood, he sets it at 120 years. And that's the max. It'll help you live that long. Bob? That's true. It would be pretty smart if you can figure out how to live 900 years.
Oh, you?
Okay. Oh yeah. They're all the same age. I was still single at 33. Maybe I'll take that. Okay, the next part of it, darkness and death. Matthew 27:45. Now from the sixth hour, there was darkness over all the land until the ninth hour. And if you can't tell time when they did, that's from noon to like 3 in the afternoon. Mark 15:33, and when the sixth hour had come, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. Luke 23:44-45, now it was about the sixth hour, and there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour, when the sun's light failed. All right, so the sun went dark, middle of the afternoon. Does it usually go dark between noon and 3? No. It's a miracle?
Yeah.
Yes, it's a miracle. God's hand. There are those, I'm not going to finish. There are those who will say that it's an eclipse. And I'll tell you right now, it's not. Because if you look at when the Passover happens on the 15th day of the first month, Nisan. 14th day, whatever it is, 14th day. Nisan starts with the first new moon of the spring. 14 days later would be a full moon. If I'm the earth, and that's the sun, to see the full moon, they got to be on opposite sides. You can't have an eclipse with them on the same side, off on opposite sides. So don't think it was an eclipse because it don't work that way. Okay. We did. We had one on Easter Sunday. Is that right? Easter Sunday? No. Is that right? No, that was a full moon. It was the eclipse was earlier than that. The eclipse only happened on the new moon. Well, either. Yeah, for the solar eclipse, the moon has between the sun and the earth. Yeah. Lunar eclipse the other way. Okay. So, no eclipses. Matthew 27:46-47, about the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani. That's my attempt at Aramaic. That is, my God, why have you forsaken me? And some of the bystanders, hearing it, said, the man is calling Elijah. Mark 15:34-35, and at the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? And some of the bystanders, hearing it, said, behold, he is calling Elijah. Same thing. Psalm 22, and I pointed this out earlier, starts out with exactly these words. My God, why have you forsaken me? Okay? If you take your favorite song ever, that one song in high school that meant so much to you, and you can probably just sing the first couple words, hear the first couple words, and you know what song that is. Same thing. He says that on the cross. My God, why have you forsaken me? Is he complaining? Is he referencing Psalm 22? Psalm 22 parallels crucifixion perfectly. Like I said, from his point of view. Why are you so far from saving me from the words of my groaning? Oh my God, I cry by day, but you do not answer, and by night I find no rest. You are holy, enthroned on the praises of Israel, and your fathers trusted. They trusted, and you our fathers trusted. They trusted, and you delivered them. Skipping a few verses. For dogs encompass me. A company of evildoers encircles me. They have pierced my hands and feet. I can count all my bones. They stare and gloat over me. They divide my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots. And 19. But you, O Lord, do not be far off. O you, my help, come quickly to my aid. Deliver my soul from the sword, my precious life from the power of the dog. Save me from the mouth of the lion. You have rescued me from the horns of the wild oxen. Right there at 21, you can see where he's saved. Yes, you're right. Christ spoke in Aramaic. Spoke in the language of the people, the common people. But he spoke with the common people, and they would all understood. I will tell you of your name to my brothers. In the midst of the congregation, I will praise you. You who fear the Lord, praise him. All you offspring of Jacob, glorify him. Stand in awe of him, all you offspring of Israel. For he has not despised nor abhorred the affliction of the afflicted. He has not hidden his face from him, but has heard when he cried to him. Anyways, you can kind of see it. You can see him hanging on the cross, dying. You can see when he dies. About 21 right there. Save me from the mouth of the lion. Save me from Satan. And right there, you've rescued me from the horns of the wild oxen. That's where it happens. You can see him carry the weight of the sins of the world. It's poetry, but you can feel it. Anyways. Matthew 27:48-49. And one of them at once ran and took a sponge, filled it with sour wine, and put it on a reed and gave it to him to drink. But the others said, wait, let us see whether Elijah will come to save them. And the same thing in Mark and John. My strength is... In Psalm 22:15, my strength is dried up like a potsherd. My tongue sticks to my jaws and lay me in the dust of death. Psalm 69:21, they gave me poison for food for my thirst. They gave me sour wine to drink. Because those things, when he gave them that, it says, to fulfill the scripture in John 19, 28, 29. And that's the prophecies in Psalm 22, Psalm 69. Is it the last one of this section? I think. We'll pick it up from there. We'll pick it up from there next week. He's close. We'll pick up the crucifixion, and we'll pick up the resurrection next week. So, thank you.